Morning, everyone. We are live. It's so great to see everyone and be able to learn together once again on this beautiful, rainy Thursday morning here in Boca Raton, Florida. You will notice a different backdrop to my share this morning. I'm at home. I'm recording from home for a variety of reasons, but I hope everyone's doing great, and it's so nice to be able to learn together nonetheless. We're going to be studying chapter 53 of Tehillim this morning, which in many respects is going to be very familiar to you, because it is very similar with very few differences between what oh, hello. Oh, gosh. Oh, and we are. Apologize about that. Sorry for everyone. I'm not sure exactly what just happened. But we are back. And sorry about that. I got cut off for a second. But we're going to be studying chapter 53 of Tehillim this morning. And it's going to sound very familiar because it's similar to what we studied in chapter 14. And yet, whenever you notice similarities between one chapter and another chapter, so you have to wonder, why is it that you have two almost directly parallel chapters in Tehillim? Why did David HaMelech feel the need to write two versions of the exact same chapter? And anytime you have something that's so similar, what do you have to do? You have to first recognize the similarities, but you also have to recognize the differences. And it's in the differences in this chapter which is really going to hold the key for us as to the significance of this chapter. So I'm going to go ahead and share my screen with you. And what we're going to do is we're going to do something interesting, is we're going to do a side-by-side analysis of chapter 15, 53 and chapter 14. So if you have, hold on, it says, bring your end up the front. If you have, can everyone see? Can you give me a thumbs up if you could see my screen? No, you cannot see my screen. So we're having some technical difficulties this morning. Let's try this again. Let us try this again. How's that? Okay. So what we're going to do is we are going to compare and contrast these two chapters to Tehillim. First, we're going to read chapter 53 because that is our new chapter. And if you have a Tanakh in front of you, I recommend you keeping it open to chapter 14. If not, I'm going to switch back and forth between my two screens. But let's jump right in. Again, some of this is going to be a little bit familiar to you. But again, as always, don't just notice the similarities, but notice the differences as well. So we jump right in. Lamnatzeach ha-machalas maskil le-David. So it's a song for the machala. What's a machalat? So in general, Tehillim, when all else fails, what do you fall back on? It's a musical instrument. It's like in BRS. If you don't know what someone does and you don't know their name, you know what you do? You go over to them, you say, "Hey, doc," and chances are you're going to be right because half our shul is a bunch of doctors, right? So that's David HaMelech has that term that he's going to fall back on. It's called machalas. And according to some commentaries, Rashi says, for example, that that is talking about a musical instrument. Others say that it's not talking about a musical instrument, but rather it's talking about an illness, a sickness, like machala. And what's the sickness that we are talking about here? So we'll have to see in a second, but it's going to be moral degradation and depravity, something that is causing society to be dragged down. And then you're left wondering, who sings a song about illness, right? Lamanatseach ha-machalas, woohoo, COVID virus. No one sings songs like that unless you're a sick and twisted type of person. So Lamanatseach ha-machalas, in all likelihood, is that there are different types of music. Right, not every type of music is a joyous form of music. Some types of music are dirges. Music can put you in a good mood, and music can put you in a bad mood. Right, if you're watching a movie, so sometimes the music is gonna make you happy. Sometimes the music is going to create emotions within you that's going to match exactly what the directors want you to be feeling at any specific scene. So music is a very powerful instrument, not just to pick us up, but to also put us in moments of sadness. So lamenatzeach amachalas, if there was this illness that was taking place, we're not happy about it. We're not rejoicing about it, but there's a sadness. It's describing people crying. So lamenatzeach amachalas maskil leDavid. Amar naval belibo. Now naval is, again, a term that we had in chapter 14, which I'm not going to get into so much again. But nonetheless, according to most meforshim over there, the word naval refers to like a nevela. A nevela is an animal that was not shechted properly, but it's used in a very pejorative sense. It's some animal that is so taken over by his needs and desires that he just ravishes everything in its state. In other words, there's no self of control. So as opposed to a human being, where we have control over our behavior, in theory at least, some exert that better than others, a naval is someone who's completely given over to whatever his heart desires. And if you recall back to chapter 14, and again, that class is available on YU Torah, you'll remember that the Midrash over there referenced three individuals in Tanakh that are considered a naval. One was Esav, one was Haman, and one was Yeravam. Yeravam, of course, the wicked king who split the Jewish kingdom with Rehavam in the south and Yeravam in the north. Not good company, right? And again, the Medrash there is describing a type of person that is so morally depraved, so given over to his animalistic instincts, that there's simply no sense of control over anything. So Amar Naval Balibo, Ein Elohim. There is no God. Hishchisu v'yisivu avel eino setov. In other words, there's such corruption, eino setov. There's nobody doing anything. There's no one doing anything good. Now, there's a little bit of a difference in the pasuk from here and in chapter 14. Okay, you'll see here lamenatzeach leDavid amar naval belibo eino limishchisu hisivu alila eino setov. In our pasuk, it's avel. Here it's Alila, not a huge difference, but again, it's important to notice the differences because the key to this chapter is going to be in the differences. Pasuk number 3 is where we are introduced to arguably the most significant difference. Elohim mishamayim mishkif. So again, David HaMelech is describing corruption and moral depravity. And so what does he say? He says, Elohim, Hashem, mishamayim mishkif al b'nei Adam. Look down on these people and pay attention. Don't let them think that they can conduct themselves with impunity, but rather look down, liros, hayesh maskil, to see if there's anyone. Maskil here means like anyone who has any level of insight, anyone who has any level of ethics and morals, someone maskil, the meforshim say, in other words, is looking out for you, Hashem. Doreshes Elohim, is there anyone in this entire world that's searching for you, God? Or are we in a godless society? Now take Pasuk 3, right? Take a visual image of Pasuk 3, and now let's compare it to chapter 14. Adonai mishamayim hishkif al b'nei Adam liros hayesh maskil doresh es Elohim. There is a glaring difference between chapter 14 and chapter 53. Does anyone want to guess? No, because you're all muted. So I'll guess for you. And you're lucky here, because if we were in person, I would pick on every single one of you until you got this right. But it's so glaring, my guess is the first person would get it. The difference is, in chapter 14, it says, Adonai mishamayim mishkif, yud-kei vav-kei. Chapter 53, what do we have? Elohim mishamayim hishkif. Elohim in yud-kei vav-kei are two descriptions of God. Now, before we go on, let's just understand what that difference is. We're not going to get deep into it because, again, we want to save a little bit for the end. I don't want all of you to drop off right now, right? But Yud-Kei Vav-Kei is classically the term that's used for God's attribute of mercy, and Elohim is classically used for God's attribute of justice and judgment. That's why, for example, we say three times a day, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. The Malbim says the reason why we say that is because Hashem, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, Elokeinu, the God of mercy, and the God of justice, Hashem Echad. They're the same God. And the Malbim goes into very lengthy description over there that there are times in history when they thought that those were two different gods. Right? Think about what we know about Greek mythology. So there was a god of war, and there was a god of love, and there was a god for everything. And who decided what type of experience we had on this earth? Whichever god won at that moment in time. If the god of love had beat over the god of war, we'd have peace now. If the god of war had a hand up on the god of love, we'd have war now. Says the Malbim, that's what we say when we say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu. That the god of mercy and the god of justice, Hashem Echad, it's all the same. Right? We don't differentiate, we don't bifurcate, it's all Echad. We believe, that's the foundational principle of monotheism, is that there's one God. They're not multiple gods. So, Elohim versus Yuske Vavke is a significant difference. We don't realize yet how significant, but we know it's significant because so far, this chapter has been very similar to chapter 14, and yet, there's one word that is different. So now we come to Pasuk 4. Kulo sag yachtav ne'elachu ein ose tov ein gam echad. Kulo sag yachtav. Sag, according to Rashi, is from the language of a lowlife. According to others, it's some form of an impurity. Perhaps it even means a level of retreat. In other words, they're retreating from the proper path. And the message of verse 4 is very simple. There is nobody doing any good. Listen to the striking words. Ein gam echad. There is not a single person who's doing anything good in this world. There's not a single person that is conducting themselves appropriately. Now, if you go to chapter 14, right, you'll notice that it's a little bit different. Hakol sar yachtav ne'alachu, as opposed to sug, there's sar. Now, there's a difference there. It's not an enormous difference because the meaning of both of them seem to be very similar, right? Sar means to turn away from. Sug means to retreat, according to many of the commentaries, which again is a form of turning away. So far, you'll notice it's deja vu all over again. And if you're wondering that, you're saying, Moskowitz, why are you wasting my time? Right? Why couldn't you have just gotten on the shir this morning, said, if anyone wants to know what chapter 53 is talking about, go back, listen on YU Torah to our class of chapter 14, and bada bing, bada boom. But of course, we're going to do a little bit better than that. Verse 5. Halo yadu poale aven, ochle ami achlu lechem, Elohim lo karo. Again, a little bit of a tricky pasuk, but essentially what it is talking about is that our enemies are so prevalent that they eat us. They devour us the same way one would devour a loaf of bread. Elohim lo karo. And despite the fact that they do that and that they experience an enormous amount of success, Elohim lo karo. They don't attribute that success to Hashem. So David HaMelech is lamenting. It's bad enough that they're devouring us. It's bad enough that they're defeating us. But they're not even recognizing that it's God's hand that's allowing them to achieve that success. They think that it's dependent on their abilities and their strength and their capabilities. So there's a double whammy in this pasuk, says David HaMelech. Number one is that they devour us. But the other thing is, even though they're devouring us, they're not even acknowledging God in devouring us. Now, if you recall back to our shir on chapter 14, you'll remember this Malbim very well. Because Malbim over there said, what's this eating bread? What are we talking about? The Malbim said over there that we're not talking about the non-Jews eating, but we're actually talking about the Jews eating. And what happened, again, I'll just read it for you here on our chapter, just because I think it's worth reminding us and giving us chizuk. But says the Malbim, very powerfully, Be'arti Sham, the Malbim says, I explained all the way over there, Shebi'imei David, Nafal Pachad Al Hador Baborchet, Shematsu, that there was a fear that overwhelmed that generation, because what were they doing wrong? Shelo barchu berchas hashevach al hamazon. They weren't making their brachas properly. V'yeser hanas olam. They were benefiting from God's world. And despite the fact that they were benefiting from God's world, they failed to thank God. They failed to say brachos properly. Va'asu tshuva al zeh, and they did tshuva for this. V'taknu mea brachos b'chol yom, and they made 100 brachos every single day, and that's our custom nowadays to say 100 blessings every single day. So again, I just refer you to that because it's a good reminder for all of us about the importance of saying 100 brachos every single day, the importance of brachos, the importance of recognizing God's hand in our life. Now, let's look at chapter 14 when it comes to the same pasuk. Again, let's read it again in chapter 53. Halo yadu po'ale aven, ochle ami achlu lechem. They devour us just like they devour bread. Elohim lo karo. Now let's go over here. Halo yadu ko po'ale aven. So far, so good. Ochle ami achlu lechem. They're devouring us just the same way they devour food. Adonai yudke vavke lo karo. So now we have the second time in this not so long chapter where you have a significant difference between chapter 53 and chapter 14. Twice already, you see that chapter 53 refers to Hashem as Elohim, and chapter 14 refers to Hashem as Yudke Vavke. Let's continue. Okay, Pasuk 6. Sham pachadu pachad. Lo haya pachad. Ki Elohim puzar atzmo schona. Hevishosa ki Elohim ma'asan. In other words, the bones of the ones who have encamped against us. Right? In other words, they found that his bones were scattered by God himself. In other words, at this point in the parak, our enemies have suffered an incredible defeat. They have been humiliated. Right? Sham pachadu pachad lo haya. They seized by this enormous fear. Why? Ki Elohim puzar atzmo schona, because God has scattered their bones. Hevishosa ki Elohim asam. Right? Because God has rejected them. In other words, they have been humiliated. Whereas a pasuk earlier, they were living the good life. All of a sudden now, they are completely defeated. And not just are they defeated, but they are completely humiliated. Now you'll notice two significant differences between our chapter and the chapter previously. You'll notice one significant difference, and that is that while we have that here, you have a very different formulation in chapter 53. I'm sorry, in chapter 14. There it says, Sham pachadu pachad, ki Elohim bedor tzadik. That's very different. Okay? There they had fear. Why? Ki Elohim bedor tzadik. Because God is present amongst the righteous. Here in chapter 53, right, what does it have? It just says, Ki Elohim me'asam, because God has rejected them. That's a very different description from chapter 14. Over there, it's because they're tzadikim. Here, it's because God has simply rejected them. Now, I will point out, again, just for intellectual honesty purposes, the next pasuk in chapter 14 is missing in our chapter. Atzas ani tavishu, ki Adonai machsehu. Right? Machsehu, God is our refuge. In other words, that God has listened to the Eitzah, to the counsel of the lowly, which is us here. In other words, God has remembered his Jewish people. Ki Adonai machsehu, because God is our refuge. You have no parallel to that in chapter 53, which is important. Because if God is machasehu, God is our refuge, that's an important piece of a puzzle to be missing in chapter 53, right? That would be the equivalent of you putting together a puzzle. And then at the end, this happened to me the other day, I was ready to, whatever, right? We put together the puzzle and then there were like three pieces missing at the end. And you're like, come on, kids, what'd you do? You couldn't like, so you left with a puzzle missing three pieces. But isn't that life? Sometimes life misses three pieces. Okay. And then chapter 53, we end. Mi tain. Right? Which is a nice way of saying, like, please God. Mit Sion Yeshuas Yisrael b'shuv Elohim Shuas Amo, that Hashem should return to Tzion when he returns his people, Shuas Amo, his people, Yagel Yaakov Yismach Yisrael. Let me read to you the last verse of chapter 14. Mi tein mitzion yeshuas Yisrael B'shuv Adonai Shvus Amo, Yagel Yaakov Yismach Yisrael. Sound similar? It does sound similar, and it should sound similar. But there's one significant difference. Who can pick it up? Right here in chapter 14, it's Mi Tein Mitzion Yeshuas Yisrael. And in chapter 53, it's Mi Tein Mitzion Yeshuos Yisrael. What's the difference between Yeshuas Yisrael, the salvation of the Jewish people, and Yeshuos Yisrael, the salvation of the Jewish people? Well, it's a very simple answer. One is in the plural, and one is in the singular. In our chapter, when it refers to Yeshuos Yisrael, it is talking about multiple redemptions. In chapter 14, when it refers to as Yeshuas Yisrael, it is referring to one singular salvation. You'll also notice, again, for the third time in our chapter, that it says, Bishuv Elohim Shvus Amo, right? Elohim. And here it says, Bishuv Adonai Shvus Amo, Yudke Vavke. So we have now significant differences. That in chapter 53, we over and over and over again are using the phrase of Elohim. In chapter 14, we are using over and over and over. Again, I did three because there are three times we do it. We're using the word Yudke Vavke. And surrounding that significant difference are a bunch of more minor differences, right? The notion of Yeshuas versus Yeshuos. In chapter 53, there are multiple salvations. In chapter 14, there is but only one. So that all leads us to the big question. The big question is, why does David HaMelech need to write this twice? Right? Why am I wasting your time? Why couldn't I have just referred to the shiur that you and I gave, I don't even remember how long ago, maybe 4 months ago, right? Why couldn't I have just referred you back to that and saved us all a lot of time this morning? Now, partially the answer is because none of you would have listened to it. But the second answer is because there are enormous lessons that are meant to be learned from these differences. So first and foremost, let's start with Rashi. Rashi on chapter 14 tells us the following. Rashi says, what is the difference between these two mizmorim? Says Rashi over here on the right side of my page, which I hope everyone can see. Shnei mizmorim amar David b'sefer zeh. Rashi acknowledges and calls it out immediately that there are two mizmorim, there are two chapters of Tehillim, which sound awfully similar. What is the difference between them? Ba'inyan echad. In other words, in chapter 14, which comes first, Al Nevuchadnezzar, that is talking about the Babylonian exile of Yerushalayim at the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. The Hasheni, says Rashi, in the second one that you and I are studying this morning, Al Titus Arusha, is talking about Titus, none other than the Roman conquest of the Beis HaMikdash. So says Rashi, there's a significant difference. One is talking about the Babylonians, one is talking about the Romans. And what better time to be talking about this chapter of Tehillim than in the 9 days, as we're commemorating the destruction of both Batei Mikdashot, both temples, both at the hands of the Babylonians and at the hand of the Romans. Now, you and I both know that those destructions were not the same. There were differences between the two of them. Most notably, after the first Beis HaMikdash, what happens? Right? The first Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. What happens immediately afterwards? Hashem returns us 70 years later in the time of Koresh. What happens after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash? I don't know. We're still living through it. It's been 2,000 years of exile. So the same Hashem who brought us back after the first Beis HaMikdash, we believe and we hope and we yearn that he will be the same Hashem that returns us after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, right? This explains, says Rashi, a pasuk that appears in chapter 14 that's missing in chapter 53. And that was pasuk, that's worded very differently in chapter 53. Here we have the following phraseology. Sham pachadu pachad. Again, that the nations of the world are going to be overwhelmed with a sense of frightfulness. Ki Elohim bidor tzadik. Now, there are two ways of understanding that, right? Either that God is in the generation of the righteous one, or that it is a righteous generation. Rashi here reads it that it's not that Ki Elohim bidor tzadik, that it was in a generation of righteous people. But rather, Rashi reads it as it was the generation of the righteous one. And who's that one, says Rashi? Ki Elohim bedor tzadik, bedoro shel Yechonia shahayu tzadikim. We're talking about the generation of Yechonia, who was a tzadik. Now, who was Yechonia? I won't pick on anyone here, but if you remember back to our Sefer Malachim class, Yechonia was the next to the last king of Malchus Yisrael, of the Jewish people, Malchus Yehuda, excuse me. He was taken into captivity 11 years before the Churban, and he was a big tzaddik. He was a big tzaddik. And so says Rashi, the reason why it's only mentioned here and not in chapter 53 is because that was only applicable to the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, not to the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. Now, Rashi is interesting, and I would say Rashi even gives me cover as to why it is I'm discussing this with you today, as opposed to any other day, and that's because we're about to commemorate the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Might as well talk about a chapter that talks about the destruction of the two Batei Mikdashim. But I'm just not interested in history, and I'm just not interested in Rashi. I'm interested in taking you next level. So here's the next level, and it comes from our friend Rav Hirsch. And I hope you can see Rav Hirsch on my screen right now, and I blew it up for all of you, so it should be visible. Give me a thumbs up if you can see Rav Hirsch. No, you cannot see Rav Hirsch. I'm getting a lot of head shakes. So let's get Rav Hirsch up there. You don't want to see me, you want to see Rav Hirsch. Now you should be able to see Rav Hirsch. Okay, good. So Rav Hirsch in his commentary, again, points out right off the bat, this psalm, with the exception of a few changes, seems to be a repetition of Psalm number 14. Like Psalm number 14, Tehillim 53 speaks of an era of widespread spiritual and moral degradation. In the midst of an utterly godless world, Israel is the sole nation that, by virtue of its way of life, still stands out as the people of God, and its history shines forth as a memorial and a visible sign of the hand of God in the history of the world. In and of itself, by the way, that's beautiful language, right? That this Tehillim is describing a society that is corrupt, a society that is godless, a society that's morally depraved, and the shining light in all of that, the beacon of light in all of that, is none other than the Jewish people. And of course, that's what you and I aspire to. You and I aspire to being a light unto the nations, and that we don't judge ourselves based on what the rest of the world is doing and what their values are telling them, but we judge ourselves based on our sacred, timeless Torah HaKadosha. Okay, but then Rav Hirsch points out the obvious. He said, but the Lord who preserved Israel in exile is the same God from whom Israel may expect its eventual redemption, which is what we said according to Rashi, right? That the same Hashem who redeemed us in the time of the first Beit HaMikdash, we're davening that that same Hashem redeems us in the second Beit HaMikdash. And then he says the following, and again, you and I know all this, right? The name of God employed in this chapter, as compared to that used in chapter 14, marks the essential difference between that chapter and our chapter. In chapter 14, the name of Yudkei Vavkei is used preponderantly, while chapter 53 employs the designation of Elohim throughout. Chapter 14, the emphasis is placed upon the divine love with which God trains Israel and mankind in general for their goal, a love that is demonstrated by God's protection of exile nation in its eventual redemption. Yudkei Vavkei, as we alluded to, represents the attribute of God's divine mercy. It showcases God's love for mankind, and in particular, the Jewish people. And I'm going to add something on to Rav Hirsch, because I think he's going to get to it, but I'll make it clear. It showcases God's divine love for us, regardless of whether we're worthy of it or not. So chapter 14, when it uses Yudkei Vavkei, is the equivalent of me telling you, that I love my child even though he acted like a fool this morning, right? I love my daughter even though she colored all over the floor in the room that I am currently sitting on. Not that that would ever happen in my house and that I just found it right now, right? But I love my child and I'm going to let them have a roof under their head to sleep because that's what parents do, right? That is chapter 14, says Rav Hirsch. It's God's divine love for the Jewish people regardless of whether we're deserving it or not. In chapter 53, on the other hand, we see God's judgment in righteousness both in Israel's preservation and in its liberation from exile. It's God's judgment. Now, when I'm subjected to judgment, what is that also predicated on? It's predicated on my worthiness in that judgment. So, for example, if my daughter comes and colors all over our brand new floor that was just put in a little while ago and I'm ready to strangle her, right? You hear one of my daughters in the background, right? I can't focus now. Now you can hear the door slamming. Okay. No, I'm not going to let her in. Okay, so should I let her in? Should I be nice? All right, hold on 1 second. I'm going to let her in. Okay, wait, I'm teaching though. Shh. Okay. So if I'm going to strangle my child because she's interrupting my class on a Thursday morning, and I find that very disruptive to teach in. Chapter 14 tells me, you know what? She's my daughter. I'm going to have Rachmanis on her. There's nothing I can do. And this is the last time I ever teach at home. Chapter 53 says, right, when you subject your child to justice and to judgment, then already I might say, wait a second, right? How did she behave yesterday? How did she behave the day before? My daughter who colored all over the floor, right? Have I maybe warned her about that before? Should she maybe know better based on her age? So whereas my love as a parent will tell me that no matter what happens, I love my children and I'm going to kiss them goodnight at the end of the night. My judgment, though, looks at other factors and might say, you know what? Maybe they're not. Maybe they're worthy of a punishment right now. Maybe they are worthy. Maybe they're not worthy. And if you and I want to succeed in that judgment, what do we have to be? We have to be worthy of that judgment. And so therefore, no, please don't. And therefore, it says, refers to the following. We have a pasuk in Yeshayahu, which tells us very famously right over here, Ani Hashem bi'ita achishena, which says, I am Hashem bi'ita, which means in the time, Achishena, which means that I'll bring it even closer. And says, refers to the following. Lo zachu, again, this is the Gemara over there. Lo zachu bi'ita, zachu achishena. And what the Pasuk tells us over there is lo zachu. In other words, if we're not worthy of redemption, bi'ita, then Hashem will bring the redemption. It will just be in the predetermined time when Hashem decides that we should achieve redemption. Zachu. However, if we are worthy of that redemption, then achishena, then Hashem will hasten that redemption. In other words, there are two ways, says Rav Hirsch, that the geula can come. The geula can either come because you and I are worthy of it, or the geula can come because the time has come, whether or not I'm worthy of it, or whether or not I am not worthy of it. That, says Rav Hirsch, is these two chapters of Tehillim between chapter 53 and chapter 14. In chapter 14, please just don't touch, okay? In chapter 14, we're talking about God's kindness, right? In chapter 14, we are not worthy, but it is Hashem who is compassionate on us, and because of Hashem's compassion, that is why we are deserving of that redemption. Okay? So in Pasuk 5, when it talks about the door at Tzaddik, it's a wipe, yeah. In chapter 14, verse 5, God is only redeeming us because there is a door at Tzaddik. And it was because there is someone who is worthy. It's for the toilet? Okay, sweetie. Right? In Pasuk 5, God will only redeem us if we are a door at Tzaddik. But if we're not, then we need Yudke Vavke. Then we need God's divine mercy. There's no parallel to that in verse 53 because it's not dependent on God's mercy at all. It's solely dependent on whether we are worthy or not. In chapter 53, for example, if you look at it, you'll notice explicitly that it's talking about when we deserve redemption, then God will go the extra mile. In chapter 53, Hashem is the judge. And when Hashem is the judge, he's not bringing redemption out of an act of chesed. He's not doing it as an act of kindness to the Jewish people, but rather he's doing it because we're worthy. He judged us, and because we were worthy, he judged that we are worthy of the redemption, and therefore he brings the redemption. So says Rav Hirsch, these two chapters are really describing the two ways in which you and I can achieve redemption. Either we cannot do tshuva, we cannot be worthy of it, and yet ultimately, whenever God has predetermined that the Mashiach is going to come, he'll bring it, having nothing to do with the way you and I behave, right? Be'ito, right? If lo zachu, you and I are not meritorious, be'ito, God will bring Mashiach in the right time. But chapter 53, our parash this morning tells us that if you and I do tshuva, that if you and I do return, that if you and I do practice, not sin as chinam, but av as chinam, and behave the right way, then we can hasten the redemption. Zachu achishena. If we are meritorious, if we behave the way that we're supposed to behave, then achishena, Hashem will bring it that much quicker. That explains Rav Hirsch, is also the difference in that final pasuk. Whereas in chapter 53, it spoke of Yeshuos, right? Redemption in the plural. In chapter 14, it spoke of Yeshuas, redemption in the singular. Says Rav Hirsch, why? He explains because in chapter 14, the first redemption of the Beis HaMikdash was a short-term redemption. It was one act of geula. The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. 70 years later, Hashem rebuilt the Beis HaMikdash. That was the act of kindness that you and all had. Chapter 53, says Rav Hirsch, is the exact opposite. Chapter 53 is talking about the later redemption. Now, over the last 2,000 years of Jewish history, have you and I experienced one redemption? Or have we experienced multiple redemptions? We have experienced multiple redemptions throughout the last 2,000 years, despite all the hardships and despite all the difficulties. The Six-Day War, we experienced a geula. During the Crusades, we experienced the geula. The fact that you and I are still here and there's still a Jewish people, despite all of the odds, shows that we have not just been privy to one act of kindness of Hashem, says Rav Hirsch, but that we have been privy to multiple and multiple and multiple acts of kindness. As a famous Mark Twain says, if you ever want proof of God, just look at the existence of the Jewish people. So if we just squeak by, there'll be a salvation. But if we're deserving, then there'll be multiple Yeshuas. There won't just be one, but we will be zocha. We will be meriting many, many, many salvations from Hashem. So I chose this Perek Tehillim, even though it's a little bit repetition of chapter 14, because I think, first of all, it's interesting to study them side by side. And I know it's a little bit hard when we're not in person to be able to do it, but I hope my screen split was helpful for you in helping you understand the difference between the two of them. You'll notice the significant difference between Yudke Vavke on the one hand, God's attribute of mercy, and Elohim in our chapter on the other hand. And while Rashi differentiates them between the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash, I think Rav Hirsch builds upon Rashi, and he describes that there's a fundamental difference in how you and I can achieve salvation, can achieve redemption. That's the time period we're in. We're in the 3 weeks, we're in the 9 days. If we want nothing else, it's we want geula. Geula on a personal level, on a communal level, on a national level, and on an international level. We just want Hashem's redemption. And Rav Hirsch says that there are two ways it's going to happen. If we're not worthy, whenever God predetermined Mashiach is going to come, it'll come. It might come in our generation, 10 generations from now. We have no control over that whatsoever. But Zachu, says the Pasuk in Yeshayahu, if we are worthy, if we put in the effort over the next few days, from now until Tisha B'Av, which is next Thursday, if we put in the effort to do what Hashem has asked of us, and it's not such a complicated formula, be nice to each other, treat those who are on the margins of society with respect and dignity, and don't push them down like so many other societies in history have done, right? If we follow the roadmap that was put into place by Yeshayahu and by Yirmiyahu and by Chazal throughout history, then we can achieve chapter 53 of Tehillim, which is that God will look at us as a judge, He will see that we are worthy, and He'll bring the redemption even before its predetermined time. That is my tefillah for all of us, is that next Thursday, while we won't be able to have our classic Tehillim class because we were reciting Kinos on the floor, but instead, may we all be in Yerushalayim, Yir HaKodesh, fulfilling the mandate of this chapter of Tehillim 53 of Zachu, that we will be worthy of the redemption, and therefore Achishena, Hashem will bring it before it was predestined time. You and I will be dancing in Yerushalayim, Yir HaKodesh, next week. I wish everyone a good week. Rina, you want to say good Shabbos to everyone? Say good Shabbos. No, or don't say good Shabbos.